it's not a red card. It's not because it's Arsenal. Believe me, I like to think I'm objective enough to say that it is a red, wasn't a red. That for me is a disgraceful decision.
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
OTB GAA.
The Football Pod on Off the Ball in partnership with AIB. Proud sponsors of the Football, Hurling and Camogie All-Ireland Club Championships. Hashtag the toughest.
Hello there, and you're very welcome along to the Football Pod with Paddy Andrews and James O'Donoghue. To the two of ye, and to everyone at home, I have one question. Are you not entertained? Come on, lads. Like, what a weekend of football. Maybe I'm caught up in the madness of it all because I was in Donegal on Saturday night and Derry yesterday for that smash and grab from Kerry. But what a weekend of football. It's sensational.
That's two good ones you got to see now, to be fair. But you've seen again the scorelines across the country. It's great to see, but those two probably marquee games, you chose wisely. Of all the games to be at this weekend, I thought they were both very entertaining. I'll give you that one.
Yeah, no, we're definitely back. Football was shite for 5 years, right? Let's just say it was terrible. We are absolutely back. That Kerry-Derry game, it was just divine. Everything about it was just bang on. And even that was even before the result, in fairness, now.
Yeah,
whoever won that game, it didn't really... It's not going to have a major... It's never going to...
The goal flurry. The goal flurry has changed your tune.
Yeah, I was like, this is dog shit before Kerry got the two goals in 30 seconds. No, Paddy, it was absolutely brilliant. Everything about the whole weekend. The long-range shooting, long-range freeze.
Yeah.
Goals, space,
midfield,
uncertainty, yeah, high fielding. I thought, 10 out of 10 weekend, in fairness, though.
This podcast, after 5 seasons, was on its last legs before these new rules came in.
Mm.
No, but come on, it's like, even just looking across the divisions, right? Division 1, we've had 13 goals in 7 games and 33 two-pointers. Division 2, 21 goals in 8 games, 55 two-pointers. Division 3,
Jeez.
17 goals, 13 two-pointers. Division 4, 17 goals, 25 two-pointers in those 7 games. Like, the scores, the quality of the scores, and even if you were to flick through some of the moments of magic from the weekend that might have fallen away, like, Tipperary are a point down in injury time in Clonmel. Tipperary Football, who, Paddy, you would have been on the power rankings during the week. They were down at the bottom and they just moved their way back up. And at the weekend, They were down by a point against Longford at home in Clonmel, the home of Tip football, really. A point down, and Mark Russell over by the sideline swings over a two-pointer by the stand for them to win by a point. An absolutely extraordinary way to win a game. We're looking at Offaly Leash, right? Offaly now with back-to-back wins. Their goalkeeper, Paddy Dunican, with two points last week, set up a goal, and this week cuts through the heart of the defence and rifles a Conor Glass-esque into the top corner. Absolutely sensational stuff.
What a finish that was.
Down. 10 points down in the second half at home to Cork. And they turn it around. And John Cleary said that in previous years, under the old rules, you go 10 up in the second half, you'd have set up shop, you'd have made that game boring, you'd have kept the ball. Yet we're just being given this chaos, this drama, these moments. And I just think, early days, I'm still saying that, early days, we don't know exactly what's going to stick and what's going to work, but what a start.
Mm. The two-pointer, we said it last week, you could see straight away the scoring ratios across all the divisions. It was Division 2 last week, some incredible score lines. But some people are, the Conor McMahon has come out and said he's not mad on the two-pointer. Did I read that last week?
I think the words were kind of skewed a touch, right? So I'll dig that out now a second. But
yeah,
I'm
a major fan. I'm a major fan of it. Jack O'Connor mentioned it yesterday, obviously, that's a Kerry-Derry crazy scoreline. You remember the dross that was served up in their All-Ireland quarter-final last year. And then the display that was put on by both of those teams yesterday. And the thing I can't keep getting over, it was the 1st and 2nd of February. All the teams are going to get better and better and better and fitter and faster and stronger. And we're still seeing some incredible games. But I think the two-pointer is a brilliant addition. I think we're going to see even more of it. I've seen a lot of pot shots as well, which is good in a way. You know, teams are are backing themselves. And we're going to see those moments like we've seen with Tip. It was Galway yesterday who really, like you look at that under the old rules, Galway beat Mayo by 10 points and you're thinking, Jesus, they've absolutely whopped them. But then 7 2-pointers with a gale force win behind. So that was just a smarter team. You said Galway might have been slow to adapt to the rules last week, but they seemed to be a step ahead of Mayo across the board yesterday. But I think everyone has. I think there's a huge positivity. Maybe not. Is it all perfect? But you can't say the opening 2 weekends of these national leagues have not been entertaining.
We're not looking for perfection, though, yet. We're looking for a glimpse, a hint that something's right. Just on McManus, like, I think we were all surprised when we caught up with the lads in Concord Wood in December or November in the Football Club that McManus, who could have been a perfect merchant for a two-pointer, wasn't as gone. And he had said something similar, Paddy, as you said, but on Second Captains last week, he said that initially he felt that he wasn't sure we needed it. He thought the game might be open enough with the changes that were happening and that it would be a more free-flowing game. So it does remain to be seen will the two-pointers stick around, but it certainly hasn't. James, just from the opening, and I know it's only 29 games of football and 2 weekends and the weather isn't great yet, but are the new rules allowing footballers to come to the fore? Because we saw 100%. Sean Bugler Saturday night against Mayo kick 7 from play. We saw Conor McCarthy at the weekend, like two players who have been all-stars in the wings before, all-star nominees, kick 7 points from play as well, apparently unstoppable, unmarkable. Conor Gainey at the weekend, who's got glimpses and the odd appearance here and there for Kerry over the years, scoring 2-2. And like, just the three-up rule, I think the second goal when he played the 1-2 with Dylan was just the perfect embodiment of what the two-up rule can do. Like, are we starting to see footballers come to the fore?
Definitely. 100%. And it's because of the space. It's because fellas have more of an opportunity to get their hands on the ball in dangerous positions. But what it's doing, and I've been talking to so many people about this, it's exposing defenders. Because you are left now to fend for yourself. There is no hiding place. Imagine when this goes to Crow Park and the ground is hard.
Yeah.
Like, I'm telling you, there is going to be some unbelievable play. But it's going to be like so skillful, side steps, taking men on, power plays. It's going to be brilliant. At the moment, you even saw in the Kerry-Derry game, which was the main game I saw over the weekend. Like, fellas were trying to take men on, but the ground was kind of giving way underneath them. At times, they kind of fell to their knees. Like, when that ground hardens up, you think defenders are being exposed now, they are going to be in serious trouble. Like, the whole training sessions now, I think, have to be so split between attacking, but then one-on-one defending is going to come back into it. And like those types of players have fallen out of the game because of the mass defense and the getting bodies in and the sweepers. You can kind of stay off your man a bit. You have to be up your man's backside now. Like, you cannot give him any room, because when he gets it, you're down three bodies because they're up the other side of the field. So if you even look at the Kerry Derry game, right? No, three of the goals Kerry didn't exactly create, right? But they still got five goals, right? Derry got one goal but missed three. Ethan Doherty had two goal chances and Conor Doherty had a goal chance, right? So there could have been 9 or 10 goals in Kerry Derry. Do you know what I mean? And that doesn't even sound like an open fixture. So when you actually do have teams that embrace the new rules and go flat to the mat in the summer in Croke Park when it's warm and the ball travels, the scores are going to be so high.
You with the nail on the head, Jimmy, and Kieran McGeehan used to always say this, that when people were labelling him or his team's defensive, he's like, there's a massive skill in defending correctly. An unbelievable skill in your near hand tackle, getting your footwork right. And in a way, like under the old rules, you could really overcommit in some cases, because if I get skinned here, it doesn't really matter because I've got 3, 4, 5, 6 of my mates behind me and I'll actually be okay. Whereas what we've seen, particularly obviously the Dublin Donegal game on Saturday night, was there's maybe a reluctance from defenders to really push up because it's one-on-one. They don't have that comfort blanket. But what it's allowing, and this is where the rules all become compatible with each other, is it's allowing guys the opportunity to shoot. It's given them space. We've seen Darrell Boyle in the first half really maximise it. We've seen Colin Baskell on Dublin's side. Just where defenders might have been absolutely diving to commit there, they know they can't. And that rule, again, is creating space. It's giving forwards just that little bit, half a second, and the best forwards at this level, that's all they need. So, and I agree. I mean, lads, like I say, it's the first weekend of February. You're watching gale force winds over in McHale Park yesterday. Tough conditions. Probably, Tommy, you were there in Ballybuffet on Saturday night. Not sure the TV did it justice. You're kind of looking at the kickouts coming out going, is there a massive wind there? And you can just see as the ground just gets harder and harder. And I agree. I think in Croke Park, you're going to see... I think it's going to be very exciting to watch. But if I'm in the full back line here, you thought you might be under pressure, but you need to have your ducks in a row or you could be in serious trouble on the biggest days.
You boys know plenty of cornerbacks and fullback players, right? I haven't got this on the record yet. And we're hoping to speak to a couple of defenders in the pod over the next couple of months to get their perspective. But I've heard it from just having a couple of chats in and around. I do think some defenders will absolutely relish this and embrace the kind of one-on-one defender. And the fact
Johnny McGrath, someone like that.
Look up the John McGrath that I don't know who again at the weekend. I just think
That's his game though. He stands out so much under the old rule because he's like he was a throwback defender. I know Desi Farrell mentioned it. Probably aren't going to see Michael Fitzsimons again, but he was like a throwback defender because he was only interested in defending. So many of the younger players were coming through in the last 4 or 5 years, and it's they might be even named cornerback or wingback, but it's that's the last thing on my mind is actually going man to man with someone. You know, so it stands out even more. But teams are going to have to find these guys.
James, what do you reckon?
I would not want to be playing cornerback these days, but like I think Paddy made a great point. Like, if you don't want to give the man the ball because he can shoot on sight, someone like a McGuigan or a Walsh or something, but you also you don't want to get too tight because he can spin you and you don't have as much protection anymore. So I think that it's going to be very much like it's not going to be the type of defender who's covered in mud at the end of the game that's successful here. It's going to be the fella who plays it with his brain. Mark. Like and the reason it comes away is because of Mark Shane, because his Laker Gale was on during the week. But like, he was never dirty. Like, he was just a step ahead.
Maldini, Paolo Maldini.
He was like Maldini, or it was a Hansen for Liverpool, they used to say it was the same. Like, he never had to overcommit or whatever because he was always just a step ahead of you. I think it's going to, you have to be a very intelligent defender now to be a top defender because there's going to be so much room. But I'll keep going back. This three up, three back, right, has transformed football, right? And it has. That was the game 6 or 7 years ago. Like, we just had to put up with 6 years of absolute muck. But, like, this was the game. This isn't this revolutionary thing. Three up in your own half. That was the game for so long. It was just confused over the last couple of years. So, like, I don't think people saying that, oh, the game has changed too much or whatever. I honestly don't think it has. The only thing that's very drastic is maybe the 50 metres.
Yeah.
You know, because sometimes you're kind of thinking, what was that brought up for? Or, you know, what's going on there? But I mean, once fellas get a hang of that, there's nothing that drastic.
Yeah. And Jack O'Connor said the exact same thing afterwards. We were in a huddle with him and he said, lads, the three up is the big one. If there was no other rule other than that, it'll help the game and the transition from defence to attack. No end. Every attack last year, by and large, was a slow attack. Now you can transition by foot. That is how we got 2 goals in the first half. We turned them over and broke
out. That's Jack's mantra, kicking the ball through the lanes.
And I asked...
Do you know what, lads?
I asked Jack, you know, does this allow you to change the type of footballer you can select? And he just put his hand in his head and he went, oh, no, it doesn't. But, you know, I actually think it might. I don't know that he wanted that question from me at the time. But he kind of answered me and said he did, even though we disagreed at the time. But
well, I think the only player it's going to change is obviously you need a massive ball winner, 8 or 9. Like, you need someone who is going to compete minimum 50-50 because if you're pinned in, you're in trouble. Because if someone else wins a kick out and gets it out of that ruck, they're on your goal. So you really have to have that. And as well, if the goalie doesn't kick it out to 8 or 9, you have to have a relatively good 10 and 12 in the air as well. Because if they're getting beaten in the air, you're gone as well. So like those positions, I think, have been tweaked. I don't think it changes the inside ones.
It shows as well, like the importance. Midfield was always important, but... You know, we thought 3-on-3 inside, we're going to see 90, 95% of attack, but teams are just going to lump the ball in. They're actually not doing that. it's still, we still see a lot of maybe slower paced transitions and attacks if you don't get off the first ball. If you win the kick out clean or you're failed and you use a solo and go, we've seen a couple of times again, the Dublin Donegal game, both teams use this really well when they got a really fast transition and it's nearly a score every time. But if it is slowed down a bit, we do still see those kind of slower attacks, and that's where the goalkeeper comes in, where he's going to be very handy, that gives you the overlap. Or again, as the ground hardens up, players will be far more, I would feel, aggressive in taking their man on. So it's that balance still. It's not like the precise, maybe slightly slower attacks are gone. We're still seeing a lot of that. Maybe they will as the season goes on. Players are maybe just used to playing that way. But it's not like every single attack is 100 miles an hour. Yeah. Teams are just launching the ball aimlessly. But it does, if you win that kick out clean and you look at, like, the first half Donegal kind of blew Dublin away. The Dublin's loopy kick out, I know conditions are very difficult, but they had no platform to get out. You look at what Galway did with McDade and Paul Conroy. What a platform those guys could be to just dominate games. So it's so important for teams.
And what did Dublin do, just on that, because the middle third, and I have it in my notes here beside the Dublin Donegal game, kickouts are worth a closer look. I didn't get the stats at the time. It's just impossible to track them. And it was the same in Derry Kerry. What did Dublin do in the second half? Because they did get more platform.
Of conditions, because they had a lot of bodies in there in the first half as well. But, you know, Gavin Sheridan, he's only a new guy in. He's kicking into a very difficult breeze. But the trajectory of the kickouts were just hanging there. So if you're a Donegal and they've got Langan and Thompson and these guys, they were just breaking it. And they got so many, maybe not scores. They probably should have been a bit further ahead at half time. They were a little bit erratic in their shooting. But they dominated the middle third, and that just gave them the platform. And then Dublin coming back into the game, particularly that third quarter, it was the same for Patton. And Patton is one of the best kickouts. And he has that kind of really bullet kick out. But teams are just pushing right up. Do you know what, looking over the weekend, is there much value anymore in even winning a short kick out? I know you can chip it around the arc. I think Mayo did it a couple of times. But when teams are pushed up on you, you know, we see it in soccer, like obviously Man City having their latest howler yesterday, trying to play out from the back, play out. And even though, like, they know what you're going to do, Arsenal are all over them, and you lose the ball there, you're under so much pressure. Is that now, do teams want, does a cornerback want that on the edge of his arc when there's 15 guys coming for him? So it's...
Well, that, Paddy, that actually let one of the best plays of the Kerry-Derry game happen, where Kerry went short from a kick-out and couldn't go back to Shane Ryan.
Yeah.
But they'd given it into the corner. So suddenly they were back in their own corner of the field. Outnumbered, like,
right? Shane Ryan
was standing there on his hands and his hips because he can't get involved. He just has to watch it. Eventually they get turned over and then they turn it back over. But, like, it was just frenetic because it made it man-on-man, one-on-one, and it just took out the option of going back to the goalie.
Same thing happened to Tyrone. Shea O'Hare, who's been brilliant in the opening two league games, takes a short kick out off Morgan. He's cornered. He's snookered. He can't go back to him. Gives
he's
the ball
on the sideline, like,
and it gets overturned. It's worth noting as well.
It's like that possession. It's like we just need to get possession. It's like, but you better. Is the risk worth that as opposed to just?
I can understand.
Let's just bomb it long, and if we win a tap on, then it's nearly a score at the other end. So it's just slight changes in what players and teams have been so used to. We would have played this way ourselves. Like, possession is king here. Yeah. Just get possession and then we can control it. Is that becoming defunct in this
game? It would have to be a Durkin-style kick-out where the opposition think you're going long and you pull it short, because otherwise they're going to set a trap, like you said, and you can be...
But even if you receive it, Jimmy, you want to be very comfortable. You got to be fast. If you're a cornerback and you get it on the edge of the arc on the sideline and you know they're pushed up everywhere, you've got to go by your man. You can't go back. You have to go forward. Again, how many cornerbacks are able to do that? So it's just tweaks in what we're so used to seeing.
Yeah.
And again, unconscious, we've only seen really two games of this over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah,
but it's just an interesting thing going.
It's definitely interesting.
They actually want that ball there.
But it's worth noting it, right? The exact kind of thing you're talking about there as well, Paddy, because teams have to figure out how to break that momentum as well. So in that sense, we're talking about that Tyrone short kick out in the first half. Morgan's kicking out against the wind. He's still getting a bit of distance on it. But Armagh have such big bodies there in midfield. So in a 3-minute spell, right? So they get a point from their own kick out from Conor Turbutt. Then Armagh win their next kick out. Oisin Connolly plays that wonder ball over the top for Rory Grugan to square for Andrew Mernon goal. Armagh, then Morgan actually goes down, I think, and tries to kill a minute or two, right? Then Morgan...
Did he hit his head off the post?
Something like that, yeah. Next kick out gets overturned. Ethan Rafferty kicks a two-pointer. And then I think another Tyrone player tries to kill it, but you can't kill the clock because the clock is running anyway. Like, so it's just trying to do something to get that bit of momentum. And interestingly, on a flip side to that, I asked Desi Farrell about it afterwards in Ballybuffet. He decided to take off Kevin Lahiff, who was brilliant the first day out against Mayo, for Tom Lahiff to get that extra bit of size after 23 minutes in midfield. So we're already seeing an early substitution here. And you can already see in Division 2, I've been keeping an eye on some of the teams that have been selected. There are big men being chosen, possibly fellas that you may not have seen picked by these teams in the past, getting chosen in around the middle third because of the size there. And finally on that, one we might come back to in a couple of minutes, because we're going to do a little bit on the Derry Kerry game. Paddy Talley's decision to select Neil McNichol in goals, an outfielder for his club, was involved in every single kick out. I thought he had a really influential game around the middle third. And then obviously to concede five goals, I don't know if he was to blame really for any of them, but
I don't think you could blame him for any of them, really.
It was a really interesting decision that we saw that from him as well. So listen, I might just run through some of the results, lads, just really quickly. And we'll get stuck into a few little bits then as well, right? So Division 1, we've seen Armagh defeat Tyrone by 8 points, 123 to 18. There was four two-pointers aside in that game there. Then on Saturday night as well, Donegal bet Dublin by 4 points, 20 points to 16. Darrow Boyle, as Paddy mentioned, was man of the match. He kicked six, including two two-pointers. A couple of lively players on both sides as well.
Paddy was man of the first half.
Super in the first half, yeah. Dublin, unfortunately, suffering three hamstring injuries. So we might just chat about what McGuinness and Farrell and some of the other managers are saying about that over the weekend. So Collie Baskell, James Madden and Davy Byrne all tweaked the hammer in one way or another. Then on Sunday, we saw that unbelievable Derry Kerry game that we're going to come back to in a couple of minutes. With a minute and 10 seconds to go, Derry were 3 points up. With 55 seconds to go, it was a draw game. And then with 20, 30 seconds left, Kerry got another goal. Sensational turnaround. And then we saw Mayo and Galway in McHale Park. Galway smashing Mayo, 26 points to 16, 7 two-pointers for Galway. I love that move with Shane Walsh from the throw-in and that two-pointer just there. Just shows the way players are thinking about it and how sharp they are already. So that was Division 1. Some really standout results here. Division 2 then, we mentioned Down's comeback earlier on, a really big win in terms of the shake-up there in Division 2. Cork had beaten Meath the first day out. They were in control. They lost the way to Down, 119 to 215. 4 two-pointers for Down, 5 for Cork. Loud, Roscommon, this was in our predictions that Paddy had chosen at the weekend. Loud 115, Roscommon 117. The Rossies
he got out of dodge there.
A big win for the Rossies and David Burke. That's 2 for 2 for them. Also 2 for 2 for Monaghan. A sensationally high scoreline again. 229 to 221 against Westmeath.
They've been doing their shooting practice up in Monaghan.
Yeah, I don't know what's happening defensively, but it's sensational stuff. Maybe it's Andy Moran being in there in the backroom team, the all-out attack, Kevin Keegan style. 321 Meath. Big scoreline against Cavan, 20 points. Cavan kicking 6 two-pointers in that one. So Ronan Jones with 2 goals. He buried a goal from 35, 40 yards with the keeper out of nets as well. Great finish. So that's Division 2. Important win for Meath. They're getting that one at home after opening day loss. With Cavan and Westmeath rooted to the bottom of the table with 2 defeats in the opening 2 games. Division 3, Clare bounced back from their defeat last week to beat Leitrim, 217 to 10 at home. Sligo, again, kicked just 13 points and fell short to Kildare, 116 for Brian Flanagan's side to 13 points. Fermanagh and Antrim was a proper shootout, a local derby. Fermanagh coming out the right side, a 1-point win, 216 to 312. And Leash Offaly, Midlands derby, we mentioned that Paddy Donegan goal. This is a fella who played for Offaly between 2019 and 22. He's been away in Australia and America. He's come back. He's played League of Ireland soccer underage for Drogheda and Athlone. He's played underage in goals for the Republic of Ireland. He played outfield underage Gaelic football though, so he's clearly got the credentials there, but he's always been in goal at the senior level, and he scored that wonder goal at the weekend. So Offaly 219, Leash 117, brilliant start for Offaly in Division 3. And in Division 4, Waterford defeated by Carlow. Shane Curran getting a first win there for Carlow. London upsetting the odds, a 120-21 points win in Ruislip against Wicklow. Limerick falling short to Wexford, so a promotion charge there for Wexford again. And in Tipperary, we mentioned it earlier, that wonder score from Mark Russell over by the stand on the sideline, a two-pointer to win it, a 313 to 118 win against Longford. I think Longford scored a two-pointer to level it the last day, and they got stung by a two-pointer this time around. So serious drama across the divisions, and I mentioned some of those stats a little earlier on. So we're going to take a quick break here on the Football Pod. It's brought to you every week with thanks to AIB, proud sponsors of the Senior Football Championship. Check out hashtag the toughest for more. Paddy Andrews, James Donoghue, hold tight. We'll be back right after these.
OTB GAA.
All right, you're very welcome back to the Football Pod. Paddy Andrews, James Donoghue, can we start with the chaos in Celtic Park? Just sensational stuff. James.
Messed up our predictions, T. I was sitting there very confident going, I'm going to make a serious charge of the predictions this year. Yeah, Jesus Christ.
I needed it. I needed that.
You did need that, Jimmy. And you didn't really believe they were going to win.
I did. Off air, you had no confidence.
Off air, play the tape. That is not true. He was not backing that Kerry team.
Roll the tape.
It's that journey.
Well, do you know what? Jack O'Connor had named two debutants to start the game in Eddie Healy and Cathal Beaglioch. Mm-hmm. And then before the game, he made four changes. And I kind of felt like he was targeting a win.
But I think the difference between giving your debut at home versus away to Derry when you're a week behind as well, I think like that was probably the reason he made those changes. He said that afterwards.
But just before we get into the game itself, just a note, Damien Burke has gone under the radar. Was superb. He made a brilliant diving block.
Two unbelievable blocks.
Yeah.
He was fantastic. Stop a goal
for Cormac Murphy. I also thought Sean O'Brien had a really influential game there on the wing. You know, Kerry are looking for footballers. And obviously, Conor Dennehy were sharp. Donald O'Sullivan getting 1-2 off the bench as well. This is a fella that, you know, there's been a lot of talk about over the last couple of years and had a big impact and assist and 1-2 late on too. So, James, just talk us through what you saw. You're keeping a close eye on this one from home. What did you see throughout this game? Because, like, Derry, by my reckoning, were absolutely superb for the majority of this game.
I think it was a very, I honestly think it was a very 50-50 game. I know that even in my group chat, it was like, Jesus, we robbed them kind of thing. But I think the game kind of did come down to conversion rate in the end. And last year we spoke an awful lot about conversion when the games were 13-12, you know, 14-12. So now that the games are going to be 120 apiece, like, you can't be wasting attacks or kicking bad ball into the keeper's hands or kicking bad wides. And I think there was a spell in the second half, especially when Derry were on top, but they didn't actually punish Kerry enough on the scoreboard. And Kerry just hung in there, made some substitutions, and then they got their bit of luck. But when they got their luck, they were clinical in their execution. For Donald Downes' goal, Ganey gets dispossessed, but he turns them back over, and it's just two lovely little quick hand passes for a Pam into the goal, which was, because I know that if I got that ball, I think it was Paddy Clifford who gave the last pass to Donald Downes, I'd want to turn and have a shot. Like, so the fact he was able to give that little clever hand pass around the goalie for a tap-in, that was well worked at, for the stage of the game it was. But the best bit of skill I thought was for the two goals, McGuigan's goal. He does across Shane Ryan's body into the bottom corner under pressure was outstanding, just absolute class. But then for Ganey's goal, where Sean Shea kicks the ball up in the air, everyone doesn't really know where it's going, but Ganey has this skill of being able to judge the high ball. Yeah, so he catches it in. He's 6 yards old. He gets a dummy hop off. Then the defender is coming in on his left leg and he still manages to sort out his feet so he can do a little left foot finish into the side of the net. I just thought that those little bits of skill go so under the radar because it looks like a scruffy, messy goal. But the amount of skill in that from Ganey and in the previous one from McGuigan, like, they're little bits of absolute class that you miss.
Do you reckon Paul had forgotten that the buzzer was about to go and all he needed was a point to win it at the end? Or is that just a proper inside forward going for goal when he's 5-6 yards out at the end?
That close to goal, yeah.
Yeah, he was always going instinct. For goal there, yeah. I don't, it was nearly easier to go around the keeper and tap it in than it was to fist the point, but you could have easily been caught. Because if Derry came up the field, they could have had a 2-point effort to win it. So
definitely. They had possession with maybe 10 seconds.
But like the uncertainty of where the game was going to go all throughout was phenomenal. And also the aerial duels, especially between Glass and Dermot O'Connor.
Oh, yeah. Great battle.
Was just, I think Dermot ended up getting 9 kickouts and it played excellently and got a great point, but like it was still a great battle between the two of them. It was so nip and tuck for that duo.
It was funny watching it. Like, it was my first time seeing Anton Toll in the flesh, like the size of this fella, lads. Do you know, like, he's been over in Australia. He was over there for a couple of years. He got his appearance I think he got one AFL appearance over there. Played a lot in the second tier. I think he had an injury or two. He comes back, he's playing club football. He's in and out of Derry. He never really got a run. But even some of the fellas that would be on the beat more up there in Derry were like, this is the best we've seen Anton now. He is moving really, really well.
Well,
like
they've broken up the best midfield partnership to get him in.
And they might have to, because Paddy Talley confirmed that McInnes is gone now for the season with a cruciate. So
yeah, that is some
that's
blow.
A big loss, a blow for them.
Was that in the All-Ireland final?
I think he must have been, yeah, because he played the intermediate All-Ireland final, but he was under pressure playing that day anyway. So whether he was,
that's a huge loss.
This style of game, we're talking about guys who can break the line and are direct. He's one of the best in the country at it over the last number of years. So
yeah,
and again, obviously Chrissy McCaig is gone for Derry. That's not one they needed to lose as well. That's a blow for them.
It really, really is. Can I just ask you about that midfield one more time? Because I have a question here, in the sense that it felt like Glass, Toholl, O'Connor and Barry Dan all had good games in the middle of the field. But is that the way the world has gone now in Gaelic football, that you need, like, your midfielder going to have moments? They're going to be so important again, just to be able to nearly manhandle your way into a bit of momentum for 10 minutes at a time, because it's swinging.
So many of the kickouts are just going to go out long. If you can catch two or three, whereas before there might only be three or four long kickouts of the whole match.
Yeah.
It might be we're going to chip it off short, or we're going to try and hit it onto the wings. You have an opportunity, really, for probably about 40 kickouts to come out into the middle. But if you win three or four of them, they're on your highlight reel, even though your man might win 10.
That's true.
How many kickouts were in the game? Look at the score lines. There's between 40 and 50 kickouts.
Yeah.
So I can nearly fucking catch one myself, lads, if I went there, and it's going to look great. You know what I mean? So,
it's such a big thing in the game. Yeah. You know, Darrell Shea going up against McGinley in midfield for Tyrone, and it was a battle. It was a battle that you'd focus on, and you might be able
it
to
would be
preview
the
for
battle.
Again.
There'd be a two-page spread in the paper of the midfield battle. But
that's
then
back.
You could snooze through midfield for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
As the game was in dire straits. So the game was terrible.
Are you on Jim Gavin's payroll there? You're on the FRC payroll.
I'll tell you what.
The FRC are an amateur organisation. There ain't no payroll. But you wouldn't think it the way people are talking about them at the moment.
The midfield battle. When you're in the stand, in the crowd, and the ball goes long, and everyone goes, ooh, and next thing someone plucks it and don't. Like, the explosion of admiration and, like, awe is just unbelievable. Like, so that has been missing. And there was so much of it the last year, you couldn't help but as they fetch a few, if you're out there.
What we said, Jimmy, as well, is like, if you do it, you are... you'd want to be getting a score at the other end. If you win a 50-yard kick-out, just turn and get that ball inside or have a runner coming off you. Like we said, Donegal were always very good at this gambling. They're going to put a kick-out long and they'll let McHugh and these guys are just going to bomb forward and all they're looking for is one touch. Every team can do that now, Mike. You win
if you have the bodies, if you have the players.
Even if you win at midfield, just turn and just swing the leg at it. Just get it up there.
You have to get it out of that messy.
Get it out of that area as fast as humanly possible. But you mentioned Dermot O'Connor there as well.
He was massive in the second half.
I feel like there's always, he's an unbelievably talented player and there's always kind of expectation out of him, Kerry, isn't there, Jimmy? But again, is that even heightened even more now under these rules? We spoke about him going into the 23 final with Dublin, that he needed to have a massive game to get there. He'd had some incredible performance. He's got all the skill in the world. But particularly, you feel like he is... I know David Moran's gone a couple of years now, but Kerry need him to be dominant. They need him to... And playing a game like that against Glass, look at Kerry's next couple of games. They've done it all come to town on the rescheduled fixture. He's going to have another battle on his hands there with Langan. Then Dublin are in town and Tralee's. So it's a really tough start to the league for Kerry, which in a way is good. I'm sure Jack O'Connor's going to be happy with that. The next two games are at home as well. But for them to be really, like, Kerry want to win the All-Ireland, they need Dermot O'Connor to become consistently a dominant midfielder and arguably one of the most dominant midfielders in the country. He's going to be so pivotal.
And is that a challenge, right? Because I'm just looking at the profile, and this is very rough and it's top of the head, right? But for Kerry, Dublin and Mayo, are they lacking in that department of touch? Think of what Dublin have lost in Fenton and McCarthy, what Kerry have lost in Killian Burke and Adrian Spillane and in the last couple of years. Mayo, I just think they're a little bit light in midfield. And then you look at the size and the player profile of Donegal, monsters. Galway have monsters. Armagh and Tyrone have monsters in the middle. Mm-hmm. And Derry, if Anton Toole is able to bring this, like he's 6'6", you know, if he's able to add that alongside Conor Glass, like that's a powerhouse of a midfield.
Look at Mayo, Matty Rowan, and then Aidan O'Shea obviously has to come back. We see Dermot O'Connor come onto the pitch the other day, well able to win the ball in the air. Dublin.
Injured again.
Dublin, yeah. There's always going to be a drop off when you lose Fenton and McCarthy. So it was James Madden and Killian McGuinness the other day. I think Killian McGuinness, there's definitely something there. He's got ball in him. But we said it, yeah, but midfield, it's going to be very difficult to win the All-Ireland without having blue-chip midfielders in there. Yeah. And not just Grimley and Ben Creeley. It's four or five bodies across the middle.
That's the thing.
Because it's so contestable. You look at Galway yesterday, just Johnny Marr, Conroy, Killian McDade. Like,
even Tierney when he's back, yeah.
Tierney sat the game out. Comer coming out and winning kickouts.
Yeah.
We see Conn coming out for kickouts. Or they just say, no, stay in there. We're just going to kick the thing as long as we can into you.
I know there was that big Paul Mescal lookalike competition in Dublin there a few months ago. I just wondered if Desi Farrell need to like hold a 6'6" competition in Smithfield or something and get them in there.
We are going to see some stint with Pat O'Coughlin Byrne.
Yes. And Peter Duffy as well.
When the Cooler guys will be back, I don't know, it could be a month off and we might not see them until, because obviously Dublin have a break before they go to Kerry on the 15th. It might be for that game, potentially. But there's that Cooler midfield, their size. Like there's 6'4", 6'5", so I'm sure we'll see them at some point in the National League as well.
Definitely. James, any more on the games the weekend? I have a couple of little trends I want to put to you before we wrap up our Monday pod, and might come back to them on our members pod next week. Later this week. Any other bits from that game?
Just on Derry, right? I think they're going to be very dangerous again this year. I've always had a thing about Derry. I think they, on paper, have a savage side, but like, if you look at Cassidy's only 24, I'd say, maybe 25, oldest. Like, he's coming in. He was outstanding the weekend, right? Got three or four beautiful.
He's a shooter. He's a shooter.
But like, he's been young. He's been very young. You know, 22, made 21, 22 there, still playing well. He's coming into his prime now with a bit of leadership there. They still have McGuigan, Eaton Doherty. I said that very strong midfield. Rodgers coming from centre-back. They're going to be down McCaig, obviously, but they have a couple of strong defenders around there, and obviously in McAvoy and Baker, but... Yeah. I think that'd be very dangerous depends on how they get on with Telly.
Less than 12 months ago, they were the favourites for the All-Ireland. When they won Division 1 last year, they beat Dublin and Croke Park. They just had that absolute brain freeze through the summer.
Yeah.
The worst possible time under Mickey Hart. So, okay, they've lost McCaig, and now McInnes makes it a massive loss, but Derry still had the nucleus of a really, really good team. Glass, Rodgers, McGuigan. They're some top players in the country, so... You felt they were going to have some sort of bounce back after, you know, a disastrous championship campaign last year. Do they have the depth? You kind of worry now, losing those two key defenders, their full-back and their centre-back, to go and win the thing. I don't know. There was definitely positives from yesterday, even though, you know, we could have been talking last 60 seconds, could have talked about a very different result.
Definitely.
A very positive result for Derry then, and they go on to beat Kerry and now a bit of momentum behind them, but... No one will fancy playing that team.
It's a shame for them for Derry that they didn't pick up those 2 points, Paddy, because speaking to both Jim McGuinness and Shane McGuigan at the weekend, right? McGuinness said something very similar. He's like, the target is 6 points. The target is to stay in Division One. It's not to get to a league final for Donegal. Same with Derry. They learned their lesson last year, and McGuigan said it myself. He goes, look, we're looking to peak in April, May. And the reason for that is, league finals are the final weekend of March. I think it's the 30th, 31st. And Sunday, April 6th, I've already put the plan in place. I'll be there, McCool Park, for Off the Ball. Donegal against Derry in the Ulster preliminary round, just a week after the league final. So we're not going to see Donegal or Derry in the league final this year, lads. That is a given.
Oi.
They don't want to be there. They don't want
to
be there.
But you don't have to be playing at your absolute best to be digging out results. If they're two hardy teams, I guarantee they'll still be up the top of the table.
Everyone just wants six points.
Yeah. Everyone's on 6 points with 3 weekends to go. What are they going to do?
They're going
to
flip for it.
Somebody has to be in it. Last week, lads, the National League, we all love the competition, but this year with the change in the rules, I think teams are just get as much exposure to the rules as they can. Every team, but maybe the exception of Galway and Armagh last year's All-Ireland finalists, was looking to freshen things up. You know, Kerry needed to, Dublin needed to, Tyrone needed to under Malachy O'Rourke, Derry needed to find a couple of guys under their new manager. So a lot of the teams, the league, I don't think anyone was going out there at the start of the year going, we want to win everything. Whereas probably last year, Mickey Hart, to be fair, in his first game with Derry down in Tralee, the week after the club final, had the lads back. You could see Derry were going all out to put out a statement, and they did, but it didn't work out from the end. But I think this year's league, with the change in rules and just where different teams are at, I think you offer any manager on or off the record, they're looking to get a 6 points, stay in Division 1, and that's it.
I think that's fair, James. We might disagree on that one, but I think we will see a glutton of teams trying to avoid it late on in the league, actually, especially teams that are out in Championship early. Do you know?
But the thing about Galway have Mayo early in the Championship as well.
Yeah, but I don't think it's the week turnaround.
But you can win games, right, and not peak.
No, Galway are in New York, so they don't.
I think that there's a myth around the place to, like, oh, if you win that, you've peaked.
It's a 7 no. No, James, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the 7-day.
You can't win that game because you'll have peaked and you can't win the All-Ireland then.
I'm not talking about that, man. You're not listening to me. I'm talking about the 7-day turnaround.
That is what...
he just hears what he wants, T.
Where is the 7-day turnaround again? Is that in all the provinces, obviously, is it?
No, it is just Derry Dublin in terms of...
There's one in Connacht as well.
Yeah, in Connacht, Galway are playing in New York, and Roscommon in Division 2, who are chasing promotion, obviously. They could very easily be in the league final, are playing London, and Mayo are up against Sligo. I think they're all out that weekend, or maybe it's just the London and the New York games are the 5th and the 6th. So
Why didn't they fix that problem? Like,
that was what universally everyone last year said. Just add a weekend.
There's also a clatter of Leinster games that week as well. There's Wexford, Laois, Meath, Carlow, Wicklow, Longford. But I think it's more Division 1. And actually the Munster quarterfinals are that week too. Cork, Limerick, Tip, Waterford. So I just think it's Division 1 where we might see the finalists renege a touch on especially Derry and Donegal. So look, we'll plenty more to talk about from that. Paddy, you were keeping an eye on Mayo and Galway. Very, very disappointing for Mayo. Briefly on this one, Galway, you know, 2 wins from 2, plenty of good signs.
But yeah, definitely. And I know, look, 7 2-pointers puts a bit of a gloss on things. Like, say, you read it, Galway run out 10-point winners, you think it's an absolute hiding. That definitely put a bit more gloss on it. Big breeze in the second half, and well, we said it all the time, lads. Shane Walsh has all the talent in the world, and there's days where he just turns up and he's on it, and he is just an absolute game changer. And yesterday was one of those days. But I thought even in the first half, I thought Galway were probably the better team. I know Mayo go in ahead at half time, but that Galway's power, their running game, just more clinical as well. You know, this is the age-old challenge for Mayo. For Ryan O'Donoghue, who doesn't have a great game for them in terms of scores, they're kind of up against it, really. We said that midfield battle, Matty Rowan, probably hasn't scaled the heights. You know, he had glimpses of it last year, of a couple of years ago. But the thing for Galway, it was more improvement. We said their first half against Armagh in Salt Hill wasn't great. It was kind of very conservative. They weren't sharp. Second half was much better. And I thought yesterday, you can see the improvement alone in a week with Galway. Just sharper, far more direct, powerful running. And if you look at this, Galway 12 months ago, they'd no players. The whole team was injured. They had over 20 different injuries. And you look through them yesterday, they have the luxury of maybe not having to rush back at Comer or Matty Tierney. We've seen him last week. They bring Walsh in. He didn't start in the first game against Armagh. So the depth we know Galway have, Rob Finnerty comes on as well. They're in a really good place, which was a question mark over how are they going to bounce back after, you know, heartbreaking second All-Ireland final loss in 3 years in a game, which they'll have nightmares about that game for years to come. What they've done so far to start the season, two really good wins, and I thought they were full value yesterday. And the key thing, like, McDade, injury free, Conroy just seems to have picked up where he left off as Footballer of the Year last year, which is incredible. We're seeing loads of different teams. Jim McGuinness spoke about this with Michael Murphy and Donegal. Dublin have it with Conn and these guys, Stephen Cluxton. If you've a few miles on the clock, we leave you till the end of the National League. But Paul Conroy's been straight out from the get-go, and he's carried on his 2024 Footballer of the Year form. So Galway, over the first two weekends, arguably the most impressive team in Division 1, but Mayo were trying to find players. They're trying to find forwards who can score. It's tough start to the league for them.
Mayo, they look off it, don't they? They look like they're struggling through the league anyway. They just need to take the positives and get a couple of results, get safe. It could be a confidence thing for them to start, or towards the end of the league, start a championship. They'll find their feet as they go along, but like they're looking under pressure at the moment.
But that's McStay needs to bring true players. You know, we said Mayo are a brilliant team they had for a decade. There's been a massive turnover in the Mayo squad, and even some of their key guys are now moving into the end of their career. So you need guys to step up and take the baton. And that's what McStay is trying to find really in 2024 and through the league this year. So you, with younger and inexperienced players, you get inconsistency in their performances. But yesterday they were outclassed kind of for the majority of that game. And the age-old thing with Mayo, do they have guys who can, nail 80% shots? And if Ryan Dunne, who's quiet, Jeremy Grado, has a brilliant job on him yesterday, they are up against it to win shootouts. That's always going to have been the problem with Mayo.
Definitely.
Galway, do you think Galway will go for the league? Because I have a quote.
They might have to.
Joyce.
I think they might have to.
Benny, before I hang you out to dry, right, I have a quote here from Joyce from 7 days ago. To win the league would be great. We haven't won it in so many years. We are going for the league.
Well, how's that hanging me out to dry, lad?
Because you're about to say they have absolutely no interest in winning it. And then I couldn't come back with that quote there.
I think they have the depth where if they're making big changes in their squad, they still have quality coming in. This was what the challenge, I suppose, when they lost the 22 final, that they needed to have 3-4 guys to come in off the bench and help finish games. Like I said, they did that performance yesterday without Comer and Matty Tierney, two of their marquee forwards. So
I think that's what they were missing. The first day I saw them, they were missing Comer. They were just missing that little dish into the penalty spot or top of the D. They didn't have that kind of, that powerful. And in fairness, he did go on after that quote to say, but then you're looking at the winners in the last couple of years and you're kind of wondering if you want to win it with the way they finished up in the
championship. So he totally reneged on it then. So
I only read the first half of the quote and it sounded good, and then he just completely...
Nice.
They're in a really good position.
good journalism.
They've 4 points already, so...
We're catching up with Paul Conroy. We're doing a series of interviews this year on the Football Pod across the season. We're trying to build a 15 of footballers and just get their perspectives as the year goes on in terms of the new rules and how the game is changing this year. So it'll be a quick chat. I'm going to do a couple of them. James is going to do a few of them. Paddy's going to do a few of them as well. So we'll see how those go across the season. We're going to bring them to you on our members' pods, where we also have the pod picks, our predictions table. I can let you know that Paddy has been joined at the top of the table by myself and James O'Donoghue, who's rooted to the bottom. In fairness, we've only had 5 games to pick from. And this weekend, James, you have a chance to redeem yourself, because I'll be putting the refixed Kerry Donegal game back on the table on our members pod on Wednesday, and you can reveal whether you're going to stick or twist with your original decision.
I'm going to stick with my original one on that one.
You might change it. It's Monday. You might change your mind before Wednesday.
I'm happy with what I've seen.
Okay, so we'll come back to that a little later. And one last thing, right? There's a couple of trends emerging, and next week we might do it on the pod, because only a few games of football at the weekend to look back on. 3 refixed games. Kerry Donegal, Laois Leitrim and Wicklow Waterford. I think the Sixon Cup is on over the next few days as well. So there's only a few games of football to actually keep an eye on. So we might do this more next week. But in terms of some of the trends that are emerging, I think it's worth noting that there's very few cards being dished out so far. I think that's evident. It's like just having a little look around. Kickouts it's obvious that the chaos and the excitement that's creating is a big one. Scoring seems to be up and attacking play, the speed of play as well. There's probably a couple of fixes as well. You know, David Goff did a piece on Off the Ball late last week about the fact that a rule book hadn't been released yet. It ended up being released by at 9:31 that evening. I think there was still an odd wrinkle or two in it. So there's still going to be teething problems across the board. You know, Derry were raging after the game at the weekend. They felt that there was a 3-point swing at one stage. Okay. I'm not sure if you saw this, but Derry felt that it's in and around the Paul Gainey substitution. And you can go back and watch this yourselves and teach your car if you want, because a few of us did it in the press box after the game. And I did it again this evening in terms of the 3-point breach or the 3-up breach.
Mm.
I'm not sure if you saw it at the time, but watching it, okay, without the benefit of behind the goals camera, what I can make out of it is that Dylan Gainey actually breaches it first. Okay. But Dylan Gainey breaches the 3-up rule so much, completely forgets about it, goes right into a cluster, that when the Derry defender strays over it by a yard about 5 or 6 seconds later, Gainey actually is saying, he's broken the rule, to the linesman, not realizing that he's broken it himself. The linesman sees it and calls it that it's a Derry breach, when in fact Kerry had breached it first.
So there's only 2-on-2 in there.
Yeah, and then Gainey seems to cop that he actually breached it too. So you can see it on the camera, Gainey sprinting back quietly, and then when the camera pans back, Kerry have their 12 players up. Now, that is as best of it I can make of it, right? So in the moment, the linesman, I communicated to the referee that, look, this is the breach that's happened. That is going to happen, right? These breaches. In
mistakes will happen from McStay was very frustrated as well. Mayo didn't score in the first half at a key point. It's actually disallowed and a free at the other end for Galway. So I think we're going to see it from players just not doing it on purpose, just getting used to it, but refs will make mistakes in these things as well.
But I would also say that given all the changes that have happened, and the referees, I think in general, like it's been actually exemplary, the manner in which it's worked so far at inter-county level, but just about making things easier, because Derry obviously were upset afterwards. It could have been a point for them. Sean O'Shea ends up scoring a 2-pointer. There's a big swing. And don't give out to me too quickly. I'm just trying to suggest a possible remedy here. Is there an argument to possibly make the midfield line yellow and the 2-meter scoring arc possibly yellow? So that's one option. Or the other one is that if there's an accidental breach, that the linesman's job is to...
How to judge an accidental breach?
The linesman's job is to warn the player, give him a couple of seconds.
So McStay sentence, yes. Gone. McStay was like, if you haven't really done it intentionally, you kind of said you have to go back. And it's like, but so how do you judge if it's the, you know, just drive back looking up in the air? Like
they would. You could breach intentionally, yeah.
How do you judge that? If the linesman just goes, I didn't mean to do that, so I let him off.
Yeah, I just think it's worth maybe considering or worth thinking about. I just think this will evolve. I think the 3-up has been unbelievable.
It is the punishment for it to...
It has to be.
We've all said that is the biggest change in the game and is leading to this unbelievably exciting, high-scoring games. So if you go really lenient on the punishment, it's basically a score at the other end.
It has to be.
Does that then teams go, well, we can just flaunt this rule anyway? I know McStay, I just read McStay's comments and it was like, and he won't be the first manager to do it. It's like, it's very draconian punishment for what seems like an innocuous offence. But we've all said that 3-on-3 is the biggest change in the game.
Massive, yeah.
It outside of all the other rules, that is what is leading to just a massive shift in Gaelic football. So teams can't break it, even if it's innocuous, even if you're doing it unintentionally, and that will happen with players because they're not used to it yet. They've only bloody played 2 competitive games in it, so they'll get better at it. But I think the rule is so good, it's making such a difference that there has to be you have to enforce this rule out of all of them really stringently.
I think fellas get used to I can't remember 10 years ago, there was always 3 or 4 fellas in the other half, minimum. It'll just go back to that. I agree, you have to have the harsh punishment for a while.
Yeah.
And then it will just never be broken.
Yeah. And like James, we saw Tyrone, when they were under pressure against the wind, bring their 3 right up to the halfway line. You could see it in the behind the goals camera. and Kerry, like, will we just see teams pushing those three as far back as possible so there's no chance they'll breach it?
As in, how do you mean as far back as possible? Like, as away in, from the halfway line?
Away from the red zone, like, away from the halfway line, that there's no chance they'll breach it, you know?
Yeah. Well, like, it's probably going to be the defender that will breach it rather than the forward.
The forwards don't want to be running back anyway.
The forward is not, as in, inside forward is not going to make a run into their own half looking for the ball that regularly. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I think they'll be able to communicate it better. The only thing is, say, what I found can be tricky, right, is if a team is coming out of defence and the three forwards are tackling them, and the man you're tackling runs over the halfway, do you run over halfway with them or do you look behind you to see is there still a couple of fellas left over? Do you know, like, the communication has to be very good.
Communication challenges.
If you go with them and you've only left two back there, it's a point.
The score.
Yeah.
Or even someone the far end of the field, maybe on the far wing, instead of dropping back, you know, previously, if a ball goes down your wing and you're a wing forward, you know, you're told, get back if it's going down the far wing and just get back and cover. Where maybe now you can't actually go back that quickly. You've got to hang, you've got to wait near the halfway line and then step over and cover. So, look, it's one to keep an eye on. And I just thought it was worth noting the speed of the games like that. Like, it's totally different. Like, when you sit beside me in Croke Park later this year, or maybe I think we're all planning to go to the Kerry game in person, like, actually trying to track it and keep stats, like, I haven't figured it out yet. Like, it's insane.
We'll give you a dig out,
My point is, like, you know, Donica Gilmore gets a ball for Derry in the first half. It doesn't realise that he's actually won an attacking mark and he can go for goal. And he fists the ball wide. And he's got a free. He didn't actually realise it. Like, so, you know, players haven't fully grasped it yet. You know, even trying to track it in you know, up in a press box when you're up high. I just think that the manner in which referees have actually delivered so far, like, because, you know, rule book or not, they know the rules. And I just think it's been really impressive so far. So just worth noting that. Paddy James, that's this week's Monday pod. Thanks for joining us on a bank holiday Monday. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. I hope everybody at home has been entertained, because I certainly have. It's been a really exciting and opening couple of weeks to the National Football
League.
You were
buzzing, Tom. I could see in your tweets. Yeah. You were just...
He's mad for all, wasn't he?
You were buzzing.
4-hour drive home. I think I rang about 10 people to talk about the game the whole way home as well. So, and I told you, a fair...
Nine penalty points.
A fair Kerry crowd. I hope not. A fair Kerry crowd have made the trip as well. So, serious. You know, entertainment for plenty of people traveling the game to the weekend. So, three games next weekend. We're going to have a look at them in our members' pod. We're also going to chat to Paul Conroy. That's the plan. And Paddy James, I'll catch up to you a little later in the week. And we'll talk soon. Fair play. Enjoyed that.
Cheers, lads.